pissed off for my son. I'm fighting for my soul. God got you, boy. You try to vote, God fall back. I go hard on this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off for my son.
I see them long, hard times to come.
Season's greetings to all, and to all a warm welcome to the show where we take a nostalgic trip through an entire series one season at a time and consider them through a modern lens. I'm one of your hosts, Jack, alongside my international friend and co-host, Tony Farina. This is TV Admired when it first aired, and this is the podcast where we assess whether it stands the test of time. Elephant hunting season relocates to Kentucky, where Deputy US Marshal Raylan Givens, a white hat cowboy displaced in time, is forced to transfer back home after a justified shooting. He's quick with a quip, but even quicker on the draw. We're going to need an ambulance and a coroner. Season's greetings to the year of the elephant, cocksuckers.
Suckers. I just kind of wish if anybody were to say cocksuckers this season, it would be Max Bennett.
Absolutely, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
If here's the thing about this is the only season that won Emmys, and it was for Jeremy Davies and America's Treasure, Margo Martindale. And I'd forgotten that she was only on this season. In my mind, she was on for two. But no, Dickie and obviously Caitlin Dever. Well, of course, her name is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't think what her name is. No, it's a Caitlin Dever. That's all I can think of. Loretta.
Loretta. They come back, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, you forget that Margo's only on these and she's not even on every episode. But wow. Wowie wow. Like,
yeah, the impact she has is monumental, really, isn't it?
She is, again, America's Treasure. Like, she should win every award and everything she's in. And, like, she's funny. She does all the things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the season that won the two Emmys for the two of them for guest stars. They both won for this season. Rightfully so.
Yeah, and I think what it does is it sets Justified up now from this point that every villain needs to know, they are bad guys, but like villain needs to not match up, but needs to have a presence, needs to bring something. Not that there wasn't in season one. Obviously, we know Boyd is a great antagonist for Raylan, but he wasn't the out and out antagonist that he was going against for the whole season. Whereas Mags and the Bennett clan are for this one. And then we know as we go through the next seasons, there's kind of a one main robust bad guy he's got to defeat. And this is clearly where the template starts.
Correct. And I think it works. And it's funny because I do like, we talked about it with Buffy. I talked about it with season one of this show. I don't mind the one-off shows. I don't mind the villain of the baddie of the weeks. Because, in the first season, baddie of the week gave us Jerry Burns. It gave us Wynn. And so then he gets to show up again and show up again. And Mike shows. And I forget that Mikey's in this season too. Like everybody thinks happening earlier. And I was like, oh, look, there's Mikey. And it's funny that he's such a memorable character. I have no idea who the actor is who plays Mikey, but he's so memorable. That
even what really his voice sounds like. I couldn't even tell you really. No, but he
does.
But
as soon as you see his face, you're like, oh, just because he performs that role perfectly. And Jerry Burns is just chewing up the scenery all day long. And so anybody, it's to just be able to hold your own on screen with him is something. So, so as you said, season two of Justified, for those of you who haven't watched, what are you listening to this for? Raylan is pulled back in to obviously Harlan County because there is a sex pest on the loose and Rachel has to go get him. And it really starts off really nicely, I think, with Rachel and Raylan again having some honest talk because Rachel has no problem saying what's on her mind throughout this whole season. She's underused a little in this season. The baddies always throughout the rest of this, like you said, it sets the template, but it's also a problem is because sometimes the baddies get in the way of Tim and Rachel.
It's the Batman dilemma, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And so anyway, so they go up there, you meet the Bennets. The matriarch is fucking Margo Martindale. She's just amazing. And then the rest of the cast, her three idiot sons, And we learn that, of course, the and it takes a long time for it to unfold that there's been a feud between the Gibbonses and the Bennets that goes back 100 years, and we're watching it play out here. So it's very on the nose, and then wackiness ensues. There's pot, there's meth, there's Caitlin Dever showing up, fucking like a boss too. It's funny to see her actually 14 playing 14 because in Booksmart 10 years later, she's playing 17. And you're like, well, I remember what she looked like when she was 17. She actually looked like a child. She's epic.
Yeah. Okay. And another person actually in my head who I remember the impact she had on the show, Adam Raylan as a character. And I was surprised watching it again this time, how little she's in it. Maybe four, maybe five episodes max. And other than the first episode, when she is obviously the main plot line, you know, saving Loretta from the sex pest, she sort of dips in and out, really, doesn't she, of the episodes? But
she set up; they knew what they had,
and then
this actually launched her. She went and did a sitcom with Tim Allen for a while, and so that kind of pulled her away from being on this as much. But she's in it for the rest of the go, and as we discussed, the writers of Primeval, she was in. She was like, whatever you need me to do, I'll show up. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't figure out a way to get Loretta in. It didn't fit because they didn't. They're like, well, that would have been some stretch to get her to Detroit.
Yeah.
And then would she have, she's too old to have played the damsel in distress character that they needed the daughter to play. So they were just like, maybe if we keep it going, she's in. And I love, though, that they're all like, settle up. Let's go.
She's like,
whatever you need, I'll come right back. Because I can't imagine. Again, most of her scenes are with Margot Martindale. Talk about a fucking acting school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what happens. Boyd goes through some stuff. Ava gets sidelined a little, which I'm okay with in some cases, and feel like she's done dirty in some. We'll have stuff to talk about. So your memories, my memories of season two was that I forgot that Mags was only in this one season because her presence is so big. And you thought Caitlin was in it more, Loretta was in it more. Any other surprises on this watch through from season two? Because by this point, we were both watching it in real time by season two. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think perhaps some of the Boyd stuff. Perhaps I've sort of forgotten that he was trying to go straight in this season for a bit of it. Other than that, I think it all tallied up in my head. I remembered it all. I think because it is so, quite simply so memorable.
Yeah. Yeah. The cast is great. Everybody's owning it. You sent me the message about it being a real lived in, like everybody feels so real.
Yeah. The second you meet the Bennets, it's just that they are people. And you, of course, you recognize Jeremy Davis because he's a famous actor.
Yeah.
But as you said, he transforms into this character. The way he moves his body is so particular to that character. It's amazing. But like Coover and Doyle.
Yeah.
But even like the sheriff of, not the sheriff of Harlem. Yeah, the sheriff. Is it the sheriff of Harlem? Tom. Yeah, he feels like that's a guy they just said, well, you're a sheriff. Do you want to come and act?
Yeah.
Do you want to come and be in the show? He feels like he's not, obviously, he's an actor. But so, yeah, everybody just feels like they exist in the world. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, because in America, the way that it works is you have local police, county police, state police, federal. So Tom is a county.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Harlan County sheriff. So that is the right term. They're called sheriffs. And then the police officers are your city cops. And so then there's state troopers, and or in some states like mine and in California, you don't have state troopers. You have highway patrol, which gave us CHIPS.
Right. Yeah.
Without CHIPS, there's no Chris Pine, right? Because his dad was the police chief on CHIPS.
Look
next time, if you've ever seen CHIPS, you can look at the eyes and you're like, oh my God, that's Chris Pine's dad. No, I'm not that Chris Pine wouldn't have been an actor, but you know, it's like, anyway. So like that's, they just have highway patrol. And then of course, then we have the federal marshals and the FBI and all those other things. And so there's a lot of law enforcement. And later seasons, we also meet Constable Bob. When Pat Oswald shows up, and that's a whole different thing.
Because so you've got like, the Bennett police here as well, which Doyle is like the corrupt front of.
Because he's for the city.
Yeah.
He's like Harlan City Police. Mm-hmm. Harlan, as much as there is a city of Harlan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He is the Bennett Police. I love that that's what you say. Might as well just be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Corrupt local cop. Yeah. Yeah. So that's how, so it is a really interesting. And if you're not from a certain state or from a certain area, it really doesn't make sense. You're like, who are these people? And why are there so many fucking cops around? That does check out. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you see Tom all the time is how it is. Like, it's the opposite where I live, where there's more county, like where I live, the county jail is. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot more county cops here. And I'm not a big fan of my sheriff. I think he's a douche. And so I run into him all the time when I'm out taking a walk or whatever.
Okay.
Sheriff Prummel. He is.
He's no Tom.
He's no Tom. Right. He looks like Tom, but like Tom would eat his lunch. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain look so it's good casting. Like you said, you're like, oh, of course, that's just Tom. Mm-hmm. That's what they look like. Yeah. Okay. So I had fond memories of season two again, because of this, like I said, I thought it would last a little bit longer. I remembered it being really strong and being such a high bar, like you said. And so I don't know where it will land. I don't know where it will land overall, but I do remember, like, if we had started the show and asked each other, what's your favorite season? I would have said two.
Okay. Interesting.
Coming in cold. Yeah.
It does. Season one, we both loved, and season one is great, but has a bit of an up and down to some of the episodes, whereas two is very consistent and clearly knows what the show wants to be now.
Yeah.
And then when you add in these wonderful character performances, it just, everything is elevated, isn't it?
100%. 100%. Yeah. And we may find out. You said you have hot takes. So I don't know if that means you're going to be bringing back a worst, or you just have like a least favorite with an exclamation point. So we'll get to that as we get there.
We will get to that. Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into favorites and best. Mm-hmm. I went first. I did favorite and you did best first. So you go favorite first and tell me what your favorite was.
Sure. I found this quite easy, actually, this time round. My favorite episode is number 8, The Spoil.
The Spoil.
Which is when Raylan is being assigned to protect Johnson from the Black Pike group. And they go to the talk, don't they? They go to the church talk. And that's the big central set piece. And that's essentially why. I mean, the rest of the episode is good. But that central set piece where you get a speech from Raylan, which he's actually surprisingly good at.
Yeah.
It makes me think of like season one when he does the speech to Boyd's like raiders in the woods.
That was one of my favorite things of that season. Yeah, yeah.
And he does an equally good speech here in the church, which is kind of like putting his perspective across, but in just a very clever way. That lets everyone know what he means, but without kind of saying it. He's almost like a politician in a way, but not in the annoying way a politician would do it.
Yeah.
Then Boyd stands up and he's got something to say, and he undercuts Raylan, and we know Boyd is really, really good at talking as well. And then Mag stands up, and then you're like, fuck, okay. Well, those two were good, but this is how you win a crowd. And all of this in the backdrop, of course, you've got Carol, isn't it? Carol Johnson on the stage. She's done a pretty decent job, to be fair, herself. Yeah. Other than the silly, like, clapping the coal.
Oh my God. I know. That
which
was so
Raylan rips the piss out of her about, which so I think is hilarious. just that scene is so wonderful. And the way that Mags owns the church. And, you know, people who don't like her are nodding along like, yeah, 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 yeah. Like people who are, like, actively in an antagonistic relationship with her. You've got the guy who... she'd sent Coover and Dickie around, to like threaten. I'm not saying he's sitting there nodding, but she kind of references him and she talks to him directly.
Touches him on the shoulder, invites him to the party. Yeah,
yeah. It's so, so good. So I think that bit's brilliant. I think the chemistry between Carol and Raylan is really good.
Whoa, Crackley McGee. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like if him and Winona hadn't got back together recently, then there was something going on there for sure.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get there as well. I like how it builds to it. And then I think all the little subplots, the side bits and building up towards the end is really clever. You get that kind of corruption of Harlan coming through, and you get Arlo and Helen still trying to get away of having the money from the marshals until Helen decides, I've got to give it back to it. So, because Arlo's under house arrest, isn't he? So Helen decides she's going to give it back to Raylan, but under the proviso that he will leave Harlan and will stop bothering them and causing trouble between the Bennets and the Givenses. And then you get that cool swag moment at the end when Raylan walks away and Helen's like, you said if I gave you the money back, you would leave. I lied.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. It's just a proper cowboy hero moment. It's super.
And,
it,
and what works so beautifully is that Helen is smart enough to, I mean, she married Arlo for fuck's sake. I mean, Arlo is her brother-in-law. I mean, that's the weirdest, right? I mean, we get it. And she marries Arlo because she loves Raylan and all that comes to a head this season, of course. But in that episode, it's like, she knew too, like, we can pretend that that was it. Like he walked away and he was like, you married Arlo. I'm going to give you Arlo. Like that was him giving his stepmom and his aunt what for. So I loved it. I thought it was really great. Yeah.
And of course, it's only going to become really, really powerful later on.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Oof, brutal.
Which actually, I don't think you see coming.
Nope. I did not see coming.
I don't think they telegraph it at all. So that moment really pays off later, because we do get these little moments. I mean, like you said, it's very cleverly written this season, of like these little bits of what was going on with Raylan and Dickie and what was going on with the Givenses and the Bennets, but also what Helen and Raylan's relationship is and how that's worked over the years is very slowly and subtly kind of squirreled at and revealed across the season.
Yeah, it is really good writing. Like you said, they knew what they were doing. I'm sure when they once they got renewed, they're like, okay, now we can do the big bad season, which is what happens a lot. Season one, you get to build the world, and then season two, you're like, are we gonna be a procedural or are we gonna be a drama? And you have to choose, because the procedural, like right now on 15 networks around the globe, there's a Law and Order and a CSI and an NCIS, and that's fine. People like those shows. There's like an Australian version of NCIS that they played in America during the writer's strike. That was a huge hit. Everybody was like, oh my God, that show. Like David Boreanaz has still got a show. Because of course he does. And as soon as that show ends, he's like called SEAL Team. As soon as that's over, you know, he's going to get another show. You know, he is never not on TV.
Yeah.
That's a rule. That's a law. When David Boreanaz ceases to be on TV, buckle up. The world, that's how you know shit's coming to an end. But like,
oh, a bit like Nathan Fillion now as well, to be fair.
That's totally true. But that show too, all those shows, right? Unlike Buffy and unlike Angel and unlike Firefly and unlike this, those were procedurals. It didn't matter the order that they were in. And that's actually, remember, that was the problem with Firefly, is they didn't understand it and they played it out of order and people were like, what the fuck is going on? And that actually happened in a few other shows too, that they were aired out of order and then they don't make any sense. I'm rewatching Highlander and the early season one, they aired some out of order and they're like, what? Like they shot them in a way that were supposed to make sense to the narrative. And because people are used to, oh, well, it's a procedural. It's like Immortal of the Week. It doesn't matter. They're like, no, we have a plan. And this is where they're like, okay, we're done with that. We've got a fucking plan. So what happens in episode 8 is a reflection of episode 3 is a reflection of episode 12 or whatever, you know, like down and season 4. You know, everything. And the fact that Dickie and Caitlin Dever, Floretta, make it through this season and Tom makes it through this season. All those things matter. Right. Yeah. Tom in particular. Oh, fuck. Boy. Anyway. So that's excellent. I mean, that's a good choice. And for me, it's funny, like you said, it wasn't a hard choice. That's a good one. And I loved it. But for me, there was no choice at all. Episode 3.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Episode 3 is Eye of the Storm, because Dewey's back. And goddamn, it's just like, I've been talking favorite, not best. This is clearly not the best episode. But so this is the one where Dewey tries to be Boyd and just shits the bed. And the guy is so good. It's so funny. It's so clever. This is the moment where all of the Boydisms are come to a full head, the way he dresses, the way that he moves. And I understand he does that in season one, but I see him solidify here. Like this is, he's fully formed. And I know he's still conflicted. And the very end of this, this is the one where they keep trying to get him. And this is like, if Walton was going to win, this was the episode you would have submitted for him to win supporting actor, which again, he was nominated, but didn't win. Because this is the moment where he keeps trying. It's like the, I keep trying to get out and they keep trying to pull me back in thing. And this is, he's so good in this. And what I enjoyed about it, because he's such a great antagonist. He's such a great character. You know, Walton's acting his ass off this whole series. But this one episode, he's got a lot to do. And
agreed.
It's all, and this is the moment where I think Boyd's genuine in this. He's genuine here. This, like you said, he tries to go straight for so long of it. And this is like right in the heart of it. But at the very end, talk about breadcrumbs, and this is why it's my favorite, is the song that plays on the radio when he pulls away, The Devil Made Me Do It. I was like, God damn. I love everything. Because again, I know what's coming too. But as soon as it was done, I was just like, that was so brilliant. And even the look on his face, because he plays it straight for five more episodes. But when I was all done, I was like, oh, it's that. That's the one. That sets it all up. That performance, that final 30 seconds of that episode, because that's where he drags the guy away. Really, nothing else happens. Dewey Crow is silly. Raylan and Boyd have some moments. There's all kinds of, it's fine. It's fine. You're like, all the, this episode's, this is Boyd's moment to shine. And again, anytime you bring Dewey Crow back makes me happy. So I just thought that was just my favorite for that reason. I would just say, like, if you wanted to really understand what it is about, like, if you're like, how do you root for the bad guy in this show? Like, what do you like Boyd for? This is the one. I'd be like, go look, watch an actor show you what conflict, you know, being conflicted looks like too. It's an acting performance. And again, the fact that the guy who plays Dewey Crow is Australian blows my mind.
Yeah, sure. No, I think I love that. Brilliant. Like summation of Boyd as a character, what happens in that end of the episode is fantastic. I agree. And it's a real like, fuck, you forget kind of, because Walton Goggins as Boyd is so good. Like, do not ever mess with this guy, because when he flips, he flips. But you also get that hilarious moment earlier when Dewey pretends to be Raylan.
Oh my God. It's
which
amazing.
Is amazing. When he does the drug.
Federal Marshal. U.S. Marshal.
He keeps saying his name like 50 times. It's so funny. And what I really like is, like, we're watching it. I know we know, but we're like, that is so stupid. Nobody would fall for that. And then the guys bloody fall for it.
I know.
They actually thought this guy just kept saying his name over and over and over. So, yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, because he couldn't find a mask. That whole scene with Dewey and the guy at the store, he's like, I need a mask. He's like, is there a law against buying a mask? And he is so stupid. Dewey is genuinely dumb.
Mm-hmm.
He's so stupid. It's like painfully stupid. And this is just him. And this is when Ellen May first appears, right?
I was going to say, I think we get Ellen May here as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, Jess McCallan plays one of the other ladies who she goes on to be in The Legends of Tomorrow. So she's like a bit part. And it's funny to see Ellen May, because later in a show we watch that I think it's been canceled because of COVID, it was called Home Before Dark. It's an Apple Plus show with Brooklyn Prince and Jim Sturgis. That Ellen May, the character plays Ellen May, plays his wife, plays Brooklyn Prince's mom, and then Ava plays the principal in the high school.
Oh, okay. Well,
in that show. So it's just like, but it is, because, you know, you forget, like, I mean, Ellen May's act, like, this is when I first encountered her. I didn't ever know. So when the first time we saw that other show, I'm like, what the fuck is that? She looks so familiar. And Lee was like, that's Ellen May. And I was like, holy shit. So now going back and watching it again, what a performance.
Yeah.
To play all strung out and stuff like that.
And they clearly knew, because, you know, she's the one that keeps going back. She's the one that gets given plot lines and storylines. Yeah. They obviously knew how good she was. And it's, again, another person straight from the bat. I believe that's who she is. I don't think that's somebody acting. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's just a big, so I think that's what it sets up the universe. So that's why it made it my favorite. So again, it's not the best without a doubt, but I really did enjoy it. So you made a sound. Were you surprised? It was a shock.
I guess just because it's so early on in the season, I guess we often tend to pick the ones which are later in the arc.
Yeah, it's true.
As we're building up to the big moment. So, I really like the explanation for why. I think that's great.
Yeah, and I just think because, like you said, the breadcrumbs, and it was only like when I was like, wow. So, yeah. So what I think is the best episode, again, getting near towards the end, episode 12, Reckoning.
I'm exactly the same.
Okay, good Lord. Okay, so you think it's the best episode too?
I think it's the best episode too.
It's not the highest rated. IMDb actually has the last episode rated higher. I think that's a mistake. I don't know what people... I mean, it's good, but episode 12. So Raylan, Raylan, Dickie, this is Raylan on a mission because the shock, everybody, Dickie kills Helen. Ooh, didn't see it coming.
No. And it's horrible when you see it in the episode before. And then when you watch this one and they like, you know, like previously Unjustified, yes. they just use that little clip when it cuts to outside the house.
Ah.
And you see the flash and the yelp from Helen. It's really hard to watch. It's really horrible.
It's such great TV. You don't see it. And I think that's out of respect. I think, and we can talk about from the modern lens when we get there, because I think that has to come up. The female characters have to come up in the modern lens for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's everybody is so good. And this is Oliphant at his rage-filled best. You see him trying so desperately to control it. And he's so... he's out of sorts because this whole season has been a bit of a hot mess with him and Winona and everything. And he says the inside stuff outside. I'm just trying to get if I don't keep moving, you know, like he admits he's can't, because if he stops, he's going to lose. He'll never get up again. Like he has to just keep moving along. He beats the shit out of Arlo in this one, right? He arrests Arlo and then
he arrests her. Arlo. Yeah, yeah. Chucks him in the prison. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime he punches Arlo, makes me happy.
And I think he says, like, because Arlo's already been shot in the foot, obviously, by the sponsor, because that's what gives him away. But he makes a comment, doesn't he, in this one as well, about, like, you know, the last time you pulled a gun on me, think about what happened.
Right.
And Arlo's like, oh, okay. Because Arlo's waiting in Dickie's place, isn't he? So when Raylan walks in.
Yeah.
And he's telling Arlo to go, and to, that's why I rest him, and it's brilliant, a brilliant exchange between them.
And the guy, I mean, that is such good. You believe, and again, talk about just believing it. This is, you already know they're antagonistic with each other, and we've seen it in season one. But this is the turn, and again, this is the moment when there's no point of no return. And so the question is, since you picked it as your favorite, or is the best as well? Is the show asking us? The show wants us as a viewer to decide if it's Arlo's fault or Raylan's fault that Helen gets killed. The show wants us to decide. My question to you is, what does Raylan think? I think Raylan blames himself, not Arlo, but he wants to blame Arlo. So that's what this is. That's how I read it, is that he blames himself because he could have stopped it all. She told, like you said, if he left, this ends. None of this happens. He thinks, but I disagree. I think it happens whether Raylan's there or not. He blames himself for just being there.
I think he does to begin with, but that's because asshole Arlo makes him think it's his fault.
He does.
It's horrible. I hate that moment. Everyone I watch it, and I was like, oh my God, I just can't abide the fact that he's sitting there in that lounge, knowing full well the reason Dickie was in that house is because he recognized him, and he makes Raylan think that it's because he's been messing with the Bennets. It's so hard to watch. I just want to wring Arlo's neck. It's horrible. I think he does to begin with, but I think once it's revealed, once he comes to understand when Ava and Boy turn up, I love that moment as well, when they turn up to give their wishes, and straight away Raylan's like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, there's no, like, straight away he knows. It's brilliant. And Boy straight away, just the looks on their faces is such good acting. Raylan's immediately like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah. Boyd is immediately like, shit, we shouldn't have come. It's so good without them saying anything. I've never thought that past that point, if I'm honest. I've always thought that then it turns into the rage and anger towards Dickie and towards the Bennets, but also towards Arlo for this happening to Helen, for ever putting Helen in that position, for letting him believe that it was him. You're right, this is absolutely the point of no return. And actually, unbelievably, it gets worse from here for how Arlo thinks and treats Raylan. It's hard to believe, but it does. I'd like to go back and watch it again and watch it through that lens, actually.
I know that the show, this is Adam Arkin directed this one. He shows up later, right? Or does his dad show up later in the series? He shows up.
Yeah, he shows up, I think.
Adam shows up later. Yeah. Yeah. Forget what a good director he is. This is such a tight show. It's crazy.
Yes.
You know,
it packs so much in. And actually set over quite a long period of time, I think, for a TV episode. I'd argue this is like a movie worth of content in 42 minutes worth of runtime.
Yeah.
But never feels rushed. It feels very well paced.
Yeah. And again, because they're all, everybody knows exactly what they're doing. At this point, like you said, everybody just shows up fully in character. And so by the time this happens, you're really not introducing anybody new into this episode, no. Which is good. So everybody knows their part. They know what they're mm-hmm. doing. They know what part they have to play. They know everybody, you believe everybody, like the guy, Raymond Barry, who plays Arlo, he's so good. Like you hate him so much. Like even like with Coover, with everything that goes down with Coover, you know, he's awful. He's a monster, but that like, you know, it's very, you know, mice and men, right? With Coover.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
is it Coover's fault? It is Coover's fault. Mags admits it as much by the end, but like, you know, she still is like, he's just a dummy and whatever. Cause you know, like Dickie's not dumb.
No.
And Doyle is, I mean, the only smart one in the movie is in the family is Dickie. But again, because of his injury, he can't take his rightful place. And like you said, the way he moves, I mean, I know that they made Cillian Murphy the Scarecrow and all of that, but it's like Jeremy Davis is there, man. Like, unbelievable. I mean, he's a horror villain waiting to happen.
Oh, he's, definitely. Yeah.
He's fantastic. He is fantastic. And I know that Dickie sort of becomes a caricature of himself as the show goes on, but because of the results of this, but that's also Jeremy Davis like owning the shit out of that, you know, later. He never becomes Dewey Crow. But yeah, I agree. Like the anger, it's just, it's fine performance, fine directing, tight, brutal. You're on edge the whole time, like sweaty palms. It's really like, it wasn't even close for me. Even another episode that I was like, comes close to being as good as episode 12.
No, I don't think so. No, we discussed before. I think when it was the favorite, that episode ended and I was like, whoa, like, I know that's my favorite. It doesn't matter what else comes. And you felt the same. When I watched this, I was like, it's not my favorite, but there is nothing hits this bar. I mean, you still have time for like a twist ending where Dickie is released because Jed decides that because his mum comes to see him, that he's going to say he did the shot. And you get the funeral of Helen, and you get a nice little moment with Winona and Raylan and Winona and Arlo, and Raylan finding out, and him just being filled with rage again. You get a little moment with Mags when she goes to sign the Black Pike deal, and it's silent.
Yeah.
But she looks small. It's the only time you ever see her look like she doesn't own the room she's in, because it's, you know, this is the moment she's signing off. Like, she is small in that room compared to everyone else, and she's reliant on them. So there's all these little moments as well, which, yeah, just perfectly handled, I think.
Yeah. And again, this is another thing. You watch Margot Martindale do something different than she's done in every other. I mean, she's one of my favorite lines. There's two brilliantly written lines in this season. One is when Doyle says, he's like, I'm not afraid of Raylan, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you afraid of mama? And Dickie's face, like Jeremy Davies' face is like he doesn't have an answer. That's amazing. And then the best line of writing in this entire thing is in episode 5, when Raylan and Boyd are talking about each other to Carol. And she says, oh, that sounds like a love story. Oh, my God. Because it is. It is story. That is what this story is. I mean, the whole thing, all 6 episodes, all 6 seasons are, that's what it is. I thought it was so brilliant. I didn't realize we know as viewers, that's what it is. But like to just call it out, just like casually, and have an outside observer do it was smart, because no one too close to them, like Winona thinks it, and Ava thinks it, and Arlo, the boss, Nick Searcy.
Oh, Art, yeah.
Art thinks it. Art definitely thinks it. And so, Rachel, clearly, who knows everything. But like to just have somebody who's met him for the first time gets it. Yeah. Like, oh, because
they also wouldn't say it.
Correct.
Whereas she's like got no. Yeah, I'll just say it. What I think. Yeah.
It's so good. I know that didn't show up on one of my favorite episodes, but I would be remiss if I definitely wrote that down as as a favorite, as again, like you talked about the breadcrumbs, but everything just being set up. And that was, again, for the rest of the series and for the end of the reboot. Like that line never goes away. And I know it goes back to the original stuff that Elmore wrote. We dug coal together. It all comes back to that. But that's it. That's why it's a love story between them. And as there's just no people who they forced to be on TV together, actors who are on screen together that we're supposed to believe have a relationship, who just have terrible chemistry. You know, it happens all the time. Like, I love Girls Five Eva, but the person who plays Sarah Bareilles' husband, it's like awful. It was really bad. Bad casting. But with these two, it's just, it's like, you're like, they were, again, like you said, it's a, yes, I believe they were 19.
Oh, together. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I believe that, you know, with the stuff with Dickie, the way that he looks at Raylan, that is such heat. And that when he's got him hanging upside down on the tree.
Yeah.
And he's like letting all of that out, all of his rage out on Raylan. It's amazing.
Yeah. I really like how many times Raylan's put in jeopardy this season.
Yeah.
Like, he gets absolutely whooped by Coover in a fight in the Bennett's store.
As he would.
Then becomes important later when they have the fight over the mineshaft and he's basically about to die. And Loretta saves him. And then you get Boyd saving him again in the finale here when Dickie's got him tied up.
Twice. And Tim has to save him too.
Yeah. So, like, it's really interesting that, and I think that never really comes back again either. Raylan feels very vulnerable in the season in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
Through lots of different plot lines. The loss of Helen, some of the stuff with Winona, which we're going to talk about for sure.
100%. That's coming up. Yeah.
It's coming up for sure. and because the Bennets actually probably are the biggest threat to him, even though we have worse people, more violent people, more dangerous people, I don't think I remember. You know, maybe I'll be proven wrong as we keep watching. Raylan ever feeling as vulnerable and as under threat of death as he does multiple times in this season.
Right, because they know him. Like when the other people come in, when Dahlhauser and Neil McDonough come in, that season is really good. I mean, amazing acting there again, too. The people, they just get to show up. Like, you know, they're like, I'm just going to show up and be a bad guy for this season. So amazing performances. But yeah, the history isn't the same. This is literally 100 years. This is like that underlying like family trauma that's passed down through the generations. So he is hurt.
Yeah.
He's showing up hurt. Mags and his mom were friends. Helen and Mags are the women who hold the
truce
together. Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. And yeah, no, I think that's a great thought that, you know, he's at most risk. When there's a woman in charge, when the big boss is this matriarch. Oh, what an ending to Jesus Christ. What'd you do, Helen? What'd you do, Max?
Yeah, I do like it. And I like how it's set up from the first episode. Mm-hmm. It is a bugbear of mine at the moment with this series. It's one of the small things which I don't think they've got quite right yet is the ending of the seasons. I thought the end of season one with Raylan pointing the gun Boyd as he drove off and he just sort of smiles. It felt weird. It didn't feel like an ending to a season. And then we picked up with the first episode of this season almost pretty much straight away. I get it. They want to kind of create this cliffhanger feeling, but I didn't feel it worked. And here I really like the moment with Mags. What did you do? And she's poisoned herself and he holds her hand and you never really think of it, but you don't know if it's his glass or hers. But again, it just sort of ends with Raylan sitting there at a table and Mag's dead. There's no kind of like season resolution. It just feels like there needs to be one more conversation. I don't know, like outside the Bennett's house or like, whew, that was what a hole to do that was over the last few weeks. Or like, I don't know, you need that kind of back to Buffy, that kind of Buffy like final chat, you know, graduation day as they walk off down the street together. Like, whoa, we survived high school in the end. Or
yeah.
I don't know what you're saying. Something about the endings just feel a bit cut short.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I hear that. The only thing I could think of that maybe they're thinking of is the job continues. Like it's just another day for Raylan. There is no end for Raylan. He doesn't he doesn't know if Art's gonna transfer him. He doesn't know anything. Winona's pregnant, surprise. And You know, so it's like he's, so maybe that's it. It just gives you like that. Tune in next week, folks, for the further adventures of Raylan Givens. So it could be that, yeah. like they're trying yeah. to give you that where it doesn't end. But I do feel like if this was the end, if it didn't get picked up for season three, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that ending. You know, I hear what you're saying though. I will pay more attention to that as we move forward.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I can't actually remember what the, I just can obviously remember, as you said, Quarles and, it's McKelty Williamson, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So I remember the villains and the arc and what happens, but I can't remember the finale and what the last.
Yeah. I don't either. I don't remember either.
We get a bit more Detroit, I think, don't we, in season three as well? Cause that's where Quarles is from, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. 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 Okay. Neil McDonough. He knows what he is.
Oh, yeah.
He knows how to play a bad guy. I mean, that's his plan in life, you know? So no, he has admitted it. Cause you know, he won't kiss women on screen.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
He has a power. He doesn't do that. So he's like, so they're like, well, you're going to play bad guys. He's like, look at me. That's fine. I'm good with that. God, that's good. It's good. Okay. So I will let you go first because you have least favorite, worst. Is there going to be a worst, or is it just least favorite, or is it borderline? I will leave it the floor to you while I drink some coffee.
Yeah, I definitely have a least favorite episode, which is its own thing. And I don't have a worst episode, but I do have a worst. I'm kind of breaking formula here. So should we lead with that?
Yeah, please.
I really don't like the Winona stealing the money subplot that runs through about three episodes.
It
makes
too.
No sense. For her as a character decision, I don't get it. It does nothing for the character. There's nothing for the actress in these scenes. The only slight caveat is, I guess, the scene of them getting the money back in is kind of fun in like a reverse heist way, and with Art seeing Raylan standing there, that's a nice moment. But all the bullshit to get there, it just is exhausting, and it feels like it lasts. We talk about this season and how it passes by really quick, and Max feels like she's in it loads more. Well, this feels like it lasts forever, and I just want it over with. I hate it.
No, I figured that's what you were going to say when I was, because you were ahead of me and you were like, I have thoughts. And as I got to these episodes, I'm like, oh, these are the thoughts. Because my least favorite is episode six.
It isn't my least favorite, actually. Why don't you talk about that?
Because of what is the worst. It doesn't, I understand where we're trying to get, where we're trying to say Gary has broken Winona, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's made her blah, blah, blah. Winona isn't perfect. She's not a Mary Sue. She's not your manic pixie dream girl. She's left Raylan. They made a deal. He'd go down to Miami and get set up. She'd sell the house. She marries Gary and stays behind. That's exactly from the book. We know that happens, except it's Glencoe, not Harlan. All of that is there. Fine. Fine, fine, fine. So we know she's not perfect. We know that Raylan is still in love with her. This just felt... The reason it's my least favorite is because, again... She's not dumb. That's the problem. Is like her doing something mean, her being a mean girl, her hurting someone. Hurt people. I would believe that, but just this is stupid. She her job is in a courthouse. She's in love with a federal marshal. She understands her life. Art is her friend. Art is genuinely her friend.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things, like these were decisions not done by an inconsiderate person, but by a dumb person. But Winona isn't playing it dumb. And she's just trying to say, I don't know. I felt backed into a corner. Well, and I know the joke earlier is like, I've got $900 saved up, which I thought was really funny. So I know they're setting all that up for that, but that just didn't work. Didn't work. So for me, it's my least favorite because it just doesn't work because it breaks her character. But I get what you're saying. Like, it is the worst plot line.
Yeah.
It doesn't work, which is what makes... So this is the one that's right in the middle of it, right?
It's
right in the teeth of it because it sort of happens at the end of five, which is the one that has the love story line in it. And then six and seven are just one long slog of an episode, really, together.
They are. I like that idea of it breaks their character. It totally does. And it also breaks the rhythm that... And maybe that was on purpose, that Raylan and Winona are in. But like I said to you in the last episode, there's a couple of times in season one when I didn't actually completely buy the chemistry. I thought, Raylan and Ava, I thought was
sure.
better chemistry in season one. Again, makes sense. They're hot for one another, and Winona and Raylan are refiguring out who they are in each other's lives. But the chemistry here at the start of season two of them kind of rekindling is excellent. I totally buy it. They are two ridiculously good looking people who I can see that they would fall for each other once again. And it breaks
that again.
They
apparently eat like shit and never work out, and they look like that. What
I know.
What's going on in Harlan? How is that? How is everything? I mean, I know they're in the mountains, but everything's uphill. So you're always burning off all the calories. They eat like shit. They never work out, and they are the fittest human beings in the world. Like, you look at Art, you can see what can happen. You look at Arlo, like, people can let themselves go. Mags Bennett and Coover look like they look. Mm-hmm. But these two, pieces of perfection. Jesus Christ. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
I think the only reason six is not as bad for me. Mm-hmm. I hate the plot line, but I do. I like the stuff with Art and the older robber.
That is so
how, like,
funny.
Art was chasing him back in the day. And then exactly, you get the chase scene at the end, which absolutely amazing. Because the guy's got like emphysema or something, isn't he? He's got like an oxygen tank. And he drops it to run away. And like Art, as you said, is let himself go. He's a desk jockey nowadays. He doesn't do field work. So he's just sort of slowly ambling after him. It's brilliant. Yeah. So I think that works. But all the stuff with Winona is horrible. So my least favourite is actually a couple of episodes before that. It's the episode 4 for Blood or Money.
With Rachel episode.
Supposed to be the Rachel episode, which is not a Rachel episode at all. And that's kind of why it's my least favourite. You know, when we did Buffy, when we did Angel, when we did Fringe, actually, these shows where they do kind of have a character-centric episode, and they, even if it's a character that isn't your favourite, you know, think of the Zeppo, for Xander.
Right.
Think of the I can't think what it's called now, but when he gets split in two and they bring in Nicholas Brendan's twin in real life.
Right, that's really great. Yeah.
You know, like Xander's the least enjoyable character to spend time with, but when they write good episodes around his character, they're good episodes. Yeah. This is meant to be a Rachel episode to fill in a bit of backstory on her. And we spend all this time with this dickhead brother-in-law of hers, who is pretty good in the role, but I just don't care. I want to see Rachel's side of that, not his side of it.
Yeah.
We get Chadwick Boseman in a fun little cameo, but it does nothing for the show. It's an episode of the week. It doesn't progress anybody's stories. And actually, it doesn't do anything for Rachel when it should. Its purpose should be to serve Rachel as a character. And I don't think it does.
Honestly, if it hadn't been for the Winona episode, this was there. This was in the bottom third. I hear all that. And I thought that, you know, you're not going to turn me around because I really hate that bank robber episode.
No,
I really
didn't
like anything about it. I mean, that's not true because the art part at the end is really genius, and Nick Searcy is a brilliant. He's having so much fun. Both of those guys are having a ton of fun. I agree. Like, Rachel gets such a short shrift in this season in general. Mm-hmm. She starts off strong, and then there's this. I don't care about this other guy. You're right. It needs to be we're with Rachel the whole time. We're with her. You know, she gets the moment later when they're on the lam and they have to go back to Winona and Gary's house. And she's like a dick to everybody like she should be. She's the mom like she needs to be. Because there's a scene earlier when he says something about Rachel's my best marshal. And Raylan goes, you see me sitting here. And Art says, I do.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I do. And he's like, did I say something wrong? And even Raylan was like, nah, you're right. Rachel's the best marshal. Like, but it's just funny that he's like, you see me sitting here. He's like, being a good shot doesn't make you the best marshal.
Sure. Yeah.
Not at all. So that's that same episode, isn't it? Isn't that the one when he says that about Rachel?
Oh, might be. Yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, but she doesn't get the chance to show that she's the best marshal. It's later when and we saw it in season one. We see it at the beginning of season or beginning of this season, and you see it later in this season. But yeah, this episode, I hear you. It's not. I didn't care about that guy.
No.
Yeah, and if you're going to have Chadwick Boseman, have him.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, maybe you only had him for a day.
Well, I guess he wasn't Chadwick. He was Chadwick Boseman, but he wasn't Chadwick Boseman at this point.
But
was
he's actually listed in the credits before the fucking asshole brother-in-law that we spend time with.
Yeah.
Flex, he's called.
Flex, yeah. Yeah. Sure. And he wants to be a magician.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That was funny. But again, it's not a Rachel episode then.
No. No, no,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, no. I hear it. Yeah.
So I remember what he has to say, haven't it? Yeah, that's it. It annoyed me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're totally fair to say that. But, you know, so there we go. So we've got our least favorites. We're on the verge of worst plot line. So obviously we've got more to say about, well, what do you think? So this season, again, nothing like two straight white dudes talking about ladies. there was a lot of damsel in distressing this season.
Yes.
Which is an interesting juxtaposition to these two badass matriarchs. I don't feel like the killing of Helen was a fridge.
No.
At all. Because she's not Raylan's motivation. She's if anything, it's the opposite. Like, she's the thing stopping Raylan. Her death doesn't, like, make him become a marshal or whatever. You know what I mean? He already is who he is.
Yeah.
You know, so her death is just tragic. It was good writing, excellent acting. I mean, everything about it, like you said, shot perfectly that you don't actually see it, which makes it worse somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So amazing. Because then she's just in a body bag. You never see her dead. So good. But anyway, the ladies aren't necessarily on, I don't know. What are your thoughts from the modern lens, how the ladies are treated in season two?
No, I think you've got Mags, who obviously is an excellently written, performed, strong character. You've got Helen, who performs that role. She's a counterpoint, isn't she, to Mags, I suppose. I think Carol Johnson is an interesting character when she comes in, but she only lasts a couple of episodes. And obviously she has her power taken away from her by another woman, to be fair, which is interesting. But yeah, everybody else is, you know, Ava's puts the wayside, and the way that write her turn to being with and supporting Boyd, I think is underwritten in this season. We needed to spend more time in there. It can't just be that he's lived with you for a few weeks and now suddenly you're going to turn into like his mole. It doesn't really work. Yeah, Winona struggles with this poorly written plotline. As we said, Rachel kind of disappears for large portions. So yeah, I think it's a blokey season, this one. I'm not sure it ever really comes back from that now.
And I was just going to say, I didn't realize how much that is true. I like what you said, it's a blokey. It's a dude show. It's a show about dudes.
Yeah.
Dudes and guns, and these guns are dicks and whatever you want to say. It's fine. Dicks and guns. Yeah. I get it. But Justified season 3, Dicks and Guns. That'll be the new reboot. But
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Max and I were talking about how, like, Highlander, they might as well just be fighting with their dicks.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
100%. Definitely. It's just dicks. And Star Wars, of course, is glowing dicks. I'm going to fight you with my glowing dick. That is Star. I am sure that porn exists. I'm sure the Star Wars parody points is just glowing dicks. So yes, guns and dicks and whatever. I agree. I feel like they made a decision, whatever it was, and the performances are so good by the men. And when they do say out loud the real love story is Boyd and Raylan, they say it right from the beginning. So Ava doesn't matter as much, and Winona doesn't matter as much. And really, Raylan loves Loretta.
Yes.
When it's that he was Loretta. That's what we learn. He was Loretta, and he needed Helen. He needs to be Helen or Loretta in any way he can. You know, her turn at the end and her showing up at the end and shooting Mags and all of that. Caitlin Devers, fucking amazing. All of that was spectacularly done. And the special effects on this, it's amazing, you know. And I know this was like pre-CGI, so when Tim takes Doyle down, like, I don't even know how that works. Like, I don't know what happens if it was just like they say 3, 2, 1, boom, and the actor falls, and they add the thing in post. But that looked real.
Yeah, sure.
Like, John Carpenter would have just shot a guy, but that's not, you know. Just watch that John Woo movie, and it's like so cool to see somebody wreck actual cars again. You're like, these aren't CGIs. Look at, they're actually destroying cars on a street somewhere. I forgot how cool that looks.
Proper squibs as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I know, whatever. But so anyway, I think there's some, but I do, it's funny that you said it never does recover. And you're right. It doesn't. It is definitely, these are men looking out for their women.
Yeah, well, I mean, from this point, really, Winona is not is not written very well and doesn't have very much to do, and then disappears, doesn't she? And yeah, Ava becomes a mole. And
I don't love what happened. And as you know, I'm not Team Ada, mostly because, but watching this now and like seeing who she was in Ava in scene one, in season one to season two, yeah, this turn midway through, because she killed Bowman.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And she was ready. I mean, she, and again, so that gives her some strength. But like, I told her to stay in the basement, and then she gets shot, and it's like, I should have listened. No, what the fuck? What is that?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
dumb. That's a dumb thing to say. Like, yeah. I didn't like that. And I it's fine for Loretta to be a damsel in distress. She's a child.
Mm-hmm.
But Rachel, yeah, I think that's it. I think.
And I know you don't like love triangles.
I don't.
And for the most part, I agree with you. But, you know, it's very clear in at the start, at least, of Boyd and Ava's relationship that this is a way to get back at Raylan for rejecting her.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Both of them.
They make that very clear. Yeah. So I'm not saying that would make her a stronger character, but even that makes sense as a motivation.
It gives her more agency.
Yeah. But I don't know. It just suddenly seems, you know, like she's going from no crime in this house to covering for Boyd, which I kind of get that part, to, you know, holding shotguns on people and taking bullets for people. And earlier in this season, she says, you know, whatever you end up doing, you will not run prostitutes. Well, we know how that goes.
Right. Well,
running prostitutes.
Of course. But then, I know. It's quite a turn. And so it'll be interesting to just binge it the way that we do to see.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. Maybe you don't notice it as much when you're watching it week to week, and then you get a whole year off. It's only 13 episodes. And then you got, you know, a whole year, and then you come back and you're like, oh, previously unjustified. And you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, Ava, whatever. And, you know, she becomes my least favorite character.
Yeah.
By the time the season's over, I don't care. The whole Ava in prison season is, I mean, again, if you'd have told me at the beginning, rate them, I would have said, off the top of my head, two is my favorite. Ava in prison is my least favorite.
Mm-hmm. Which is five, I think.
That's,
isn't it?
Isn't that that's the crow, the crows,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
That's all the same one. And Michael Rapaport, who's having fun, but that whole season is just like,
Yeah, well, it comes off the back of what, in my head, I think is my favorite season, which
four.
Is season four, because
yeah,
it has such a good mystery thriller plot at its center, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, and we'll see as we continue on. But yeah, I think it is interesting to see, you know, through that whole modern lens what that does. And I understand the point that Raylan is willing to do the things he does for Winona. It's supposed to show us that he loves Winona, and he comes to that realization. It's like, it's not about anything. It's like, I wouldn't have taken the money. I wouldn't have done anything, but I would do anything for you. That's how I know I still love you. They could have done that a better way.
Mm.
I mean, you've already damsel in distressed her several times. So just have it be that, have it win. You've got win there. Do something like that, that he needs to save her in some way. I would rather have damsel in distressed her than her doing something stupid. And again, just like that, they're trying to give Ava some agency, but they swing and miss. They're trying to give Winona some agency, but they swing and miss. Like, it needed to be something else. It needed to be like, if Winona, and I'm just going to make something up as we're sitting here. If you needed Winona to do something illegal that Raylan needed to help her out, she's a court reporter.
Mm-hmm.
She could have, this guy's a son of a bitch, and if we don't do XYZ, he'll go free. So I'm going to tamper with evidence. Same story. Tamper with evidence. Because, and then she regrets it. You could even do the rest of it the same with that somebody else gets involved and Raylan has to get involved, blah, 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 blah. Fine. But like, at least you could say like she was doing it for a reason, where this is just dumb.
Yeah. 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 It just doesn't make any sense. And I think,
Gary buys a horse.
Yeah. You said it best earlier. Like, it makes no sense because Winona is an intelligent person. If this was Dewey, fine.
Of course. Of course.
Makes perfect sense he would do that.
Yeah, right.
But Winona just wouldn't do this. I don't know how nobody stopped this before. I don't know how this got past the concept stage, let alone the script stage.
Yeah, agreed. I agree. Yeah, it's a thumbs down. So again, you were right to break tradition and say there's definitely a worse plot. Like, because again, in all of those episodes, even in four, even in six, there's something that you know, Flex is going to be a magician, Art in the old mansion. So there's always something good. So it's not just like a flat out. We're not. None of these are bad beer.
But, no. Yeah.
You know. So that's always the level. Is there a bad beer? Nope. Then there's not a worst. But there's definitely least favorite. So.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end, unfortunately, folks, for us, for Jack and I, unfortunately, that we're still only 4 hours apart. So time is coming to an end. We would talk more about our favorite cowboy. And although everybody's favorite cowboy shows up before the series ends, Sam Elliott sans mustache shows up later.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
Which is crazy when we get there. Lee Scoresby without his mustache. So, well, I'm looking forward to season three. Again, I feel like this is they really had money to spend. So yes. They were like, let's spend some money on a couple of award-winning baddies and bring them in and see. Margo Mountaindale, America's fucking treasure, man. She's so good. And the thing is, what I loved about her in this season is just, I've seen her in so many things and she's always good. And she looks like Margo Mountaindale. Like she's not, like Jeremy Davies, like you said, he blends, like he does the thing and he moves in a certain way and he loses himself in the role. She always looks like this. Like if you go back and look at The Rocketeer, she looks like this. Mm-hmm. She owns the diner in The Rocketeer. Guess what she looks like? This. But she's a totally different character. Mm-hmm. She's so good. And this goes back to character actors, as we talked about with, and I think it'll be interesting, you know, as we continue to move forward, because the guy who plays Jed, I'm like, oh, I've seen that guy, you know, and he wears a beard and he looks, he disappears, but you're just like, you're just that guy. So it's just really, she's just so good. It's like a clinic of how to know what you look like, but do what you can, the difference between acting and like method acting.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
She disappears.
She does.
Everybody loves her too. So I feel like, you know, she's in Cocaine Bear as the hero.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I love Coke. I am on record that Cocaine Bear was a lot of fun. Any movie that knows exactly what it is, I'm here for.
Yeah. But she's 100%, as you said, not Bags Bennett in Cocaine Bear.
She's amazing at that though. Oh my God. Oh, she's great. Well, anyway. So was this your first Margo Mountaindale that you remember in life?
Probably. Yeah. And then Emma and I had a very interesting conversation about Margot Mountaindale and Anne Dowd.
Mm.
And how they don't look exactly the same, but they could almost be mistaken for sisters or something. And there's a funny article out online where they were interviewed together and they were like, yeah, people mistake us for each other all the damn time.
It's amazing.
So it's worth looking that out and having a read.
I will give it a read. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, in whatever she's in, she was in the film version of August, Osage County.
Right, okay.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. She's, you know, eighth billing, and it's like Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts. I mean, she's like...
Yeah, she makes it like a Kathy Bates type as well, who, like, obviously we know when she's the star, she's the star, but when she's not, she's just popping by, she's still the star.
She's still the star. That's exactly it. That's why it's like America's Church. We watch some weird TV show with Naomi Watts, Bobby Cannavale, and Margot Mountaindale plays the neighbor. And whenever she's on it, it's her, she's married to Richard Kind. And whenever they're on screen together, you can't look away. And again, Richard Kind knows who he is.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it was called. Doesn't matter. We were like, look, Margot Mountaindale. And that was one of those ones where the algorithm was like, are you interested in this? And it showed her, and we're like,
oh, she's in it. Yeah.
We had no idea what it was. It wasn't great. It was one of those, it was a Ryan Murphy thing, but like, she was great in it. Yeah, you're right. She's always a star. You can't look away from her. And I do believe, I mean, I don't know that Caitlin Dever has said this, but I can't imagine she's really good, but I'm assuming getting to spend, you know, 3 months learning from her.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, this was good. Thank you, my friend. So next up for you and me is Lawless, or as you like to say, Flawless.
Indeed.
So that's coming. There was a bit of a femme fatale with Carol in this. There was a femme fatale moment.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved that scene where his brain short-circuited. And you see, I almost wonder if that was that acting or was that her, like...
Is that when she kisses him on the...
No, when she's walking around with the robe.
Oh, open, yeah, fantastic, yeah.
And he's
like,
click. So I don't know if she just did that or if that was just really great acting. But either way, his brain, 100%. She was... If there was a... Like, she was auditioning to be a femme fatale, that was the scene.
Yeah,
for her, she was really great, but it wasn't Leary. It was shot really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she was using that to own the room rather than he was using it to perv on her.
Yeah, because he wasn't trying to look. He was so desperately trying not to look. Well, I mean,
he was telling himself he didn't want to look. Yes, but he did want to look.
100% true. 100% true. So when this comes out in mid-April-ish, sorry, M. Hello, M. Sorry, it's been another few weeks. What's filmography?
Oh, good question. Where am I at with Bat's filmography? Because I'm coming towards the end, obviously, as we know. So mid-August.
Mid-April.
No, sorry. Yes, that's because mid-August is when I finish. That's why. That's
I'll
why
be back on by then for the
group. You will be back on.
Yeah,
by
yeah.
Then. Yeah. Mid-April, I will be Megging. Well, towards the end of April, I'll be Megging with Mike and Meg.
Yes. Amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I can't wait. That movie. Mm. And I think I like the Meg 2 better.
Yeah, I do as well.
Because it knew exactly. It's like, oh.
You like this? Wow. Well, how about this?
What happens when we double the budget? Okay. Yeah. Thank you, please. This makes even less sense. And that's what I love about it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll excellent. Also be Spider-Danning for his 200th episode, I think, around about
right.
the same time.
Oh, my God.
So, that's exciting.
That is good exciting. On you, you're on 100, and now you'll be on 200. You are the only guest for every 100. It has to be you for in perpetuity.
Sure.
I'm
more than happy with that, but whether Dan is or not.
That's my vote as well. Well, that's excellent. Well, yeah, good on you. Congratulations, Dan. You're awesome. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you go, and we'll play out with that kick drum and some banjo. What do you say?
Beautiful.
Excellent. We'll see everybody next time.
Take care.
On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, who wants some? I'm fighting for my soul. God, get you, boy. You're trying to poke on, fall back. I go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, who wants some? Son, prepared to kill, son. A paradox of pain, baby, is real, son. Lonely traveler, ain't trying to bow to you. But if you're feeling tough, dog, I welcome all challengers. Ain't got no family, you see this one to me. Might lose your post, standing 2 feet in front of me. I'm pissed at the world, but I ain't looking for trouble. I might crack a grin, I ain't looking to hug you. Think about it, nobody wants to die. There's rule to this game, son, I'm justified. I'm ready to go, partner, hey. On the run, the devil's hugging on my boots, that's why I own the gun. This journey's too long, I'm looking for some answers. So much time stressing, I forget the questions. I fear no man, you don't want no problems. B, eyes in the back of my head, you better not follow me. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, who wants some? I'm fighting for my soul, God, get at your boy. You try to hold on, fall back, I go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome. Alright though, I'ma do me, you do you. So how you judging me? I'm just trying to survive. And if the time comes, I ain't trying to die. I'm just trying to fly and get a little love. Find me a dime piece and get a little hug. Hook the car up, hit the bar up, clean the scars up. Hey yo, the stars up. Hey, this is the life of an outlaw. We ain't promised tomorrow, I'm living now, dawg. I'm walking through life, but yo, my feet hurt. All my blessings are fair. Man,